You know, behind every smile is a set of teeth. Mm-hmm. Behind every, you are wonderful, you are wonderful. If someone is telling you how wonderful you are all the time, run.
Encouraging, inspiring, and equipping leaders. This is Coach and Joe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach and Joe. Here again with Big Mike Thornton. Michael, I had a young fella about 4 years ago put his finger in my face. He prophesied over me. He said, God's going to make you teach on end times. I said, bless your little heart. My mind, I said, bless your little heart. I had not really been, I don't know why. I just don't really think much about the end times. Boy, that changed instantly. God has brought two authors across my path that I've really gleaned from. One, I cannot pronounce his last name, T-S-F-A-R-T-I, I believe, lives at the Valley of Jezreel. Yes, that's true. I mean, that's, wow. I'm not making that up. And the other is Jimmy Evans, who just wrote a book a couple years ago called Tipping Point. The end is here, not near, here. Michael, I believe with my entire being that we are in the end times.
I believe it, Chad.
We had a president of the United States of America had his home raided last night by another side, or 2 nights ago, by another side of political party. It's like chaos everywhere. Storm systems, Gaza Strips unloading on Israel this past week. It's just like so much political, all around the world, not just in America. Wars, rumors of wars, the China situation, Russia, Ukraine.
Natural disasters. I mean, just it's increasing.
But there's one more thing that you mentioned, and you've got a lot of revelation on, no pun intended, revelation. There's a sign of the end times from Paul and Jesus.
Yes.
Talk about it.
I feel like the Lord just showed me something so clearly right now. This is unbelievable. In the scripture, a lot of times Jesus, and he talks like in Matthew 24 and other places like we were just talking about, he gives a lot of signs of the end, natural disasters, earthquakes, famines. A lot of those are external. What I've learned is that in Paul's letters, he does the same, but a little bit different. His approach is more within the church. The
Lord just showed you that, didn't he?
He gives signs within the church of what the condition of the church will look like as we get closer to the end. The love of many will grow cold. The great falling away of the faith, if possible, even the elect shall be deceived. And we see in Revelation chapter 12 this epic battle that's going to take place at the end of the days, last days, which we are in, and it gives us a sight of the church. And the battle, obviously, is between the enemy and Satan and the church.
A lot of people are like, what do you mean we're in the end times? It's all in the Word.
Yes.
Jesus said it's impossible for offenses not to come. Who is the one thrashing in the second realm, all of the hatred? Well, it's the devil himself.
Yes.
Revelation is the picture of a dragon.
Yes.
But let's talk about Satan in Hebrew. Okay. He is the accuser of the brethren. Guess what a sign of the end times is? When God is in a place, your sphere of influence in the end times, accusation will be ramped up. Just, I don't care what side of the fence you're on politically. Look at how in the last 20 years in American politics, it's like all news is now is an accusation checkbox.
Towards each other.
It's so annoying.
It's terrible.
Churches, I believe, as we get closer to the return of Jesus, which is close, accusation upon accusation upon accusation. What is this passage? What do you have to say about it?
The enemy is the accuser, Satan. This is the origin of it. And his language is accusation. His language, this is what he speaks and he communicates. And in Revelation 12, this is what we see. It says that the accuser of the brethren accuses them day and night, night and day. So there is an ongoing.
What is the root of that? Why is he that way?
I believe he really, really wants to divide, bring division, but he also, he hates God.
And it basically, him hating God, which is always boggled my mind. There's a revolt before humans were even made. He's basically just the opposite of who the Father is.
Yes.
So Jesus says in John 8, they said, our father's Abraham. You believe the Lord said this? He goes,
your father's the devil.
The devil. He's the father of lies. I think he said he's always been the father of lies.
Always been the father of lies.
So it's just in his DNA.
It's in his DNA. So that's his language. And he is going to be working overtime to tear up the church. But what that tells us is that a sign of the end times within the church is that accusation will be increased at a higher level within the church. Words like gossip, slander, accusatory statements. Jesus said at the end, many will be offended. So these are all signs. You know, these are all things pointing to what the condition of the church is going to look like during the end. But there is good news in it. There's also a remnant bride. There's a remnant church that says, but they will overcome him, the accuser. They will overcome the accusation
by
the blood of the Lamb and the word of the testimony. Two powerful, powerful weapons in the kingdom.
I had someone recently, there was someone trying to talk a person out of leaving our faith community, Garden Greenville. And the person had another friend that said, does it bother you that there's so much fruit, though, in the people you're doing life with? Like, how do you explain that? I think how we step into fruit in our lives, blood of the Lamb, the word of the testimony. Mm. Testimony is you start sharing your story on the fruit of what the blood of the Lamb's doing, right?
Yes.
We just went to youth camp last week. Man, it's powerful, Michael. Goodness gracious. You spoke on fasting one night. I've noticed since youth camp, I'm seeing just so much already just fruit in these kids. Accusation, it's just the devil.
Yes.
You'll be tempted to take eyes off fruit. So I know we keep our eyes on Jesus, but if I abide in him, I shall bear much fruit, right?
Yes.
Accusation is really, I think, intended. At the end of the day, sticks and stones, what's the big deal? Well, it's intended to distract me from Jesus and the fruit.
There it is.
It's a distraction.
It's a key word. It's a distraction. It's the enemy's ploy to distract the church. And he wants to get us so tangled. And remember, he can't make us do anything, but we have to agree and partner with him. So if he could throw that distraction, that's how he gets us. However, that blood of the Lamb sharing their testimony, that's what Jesus is saying. This is the strategy against accusation. So don't focus on the accusation. Focus on what I'm doing and proclaim that in the air.
I remember where I was when the Father gave me some advice on spiritual warfare, Michael. This is boss status from the Father. He said, you want to defeat the devil? And I was like, woo. He said, ignore him. Mm. You know, the devil hates being ignored.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the word too. And it says, resist him.
He hates being ignored. What if most of warfare is ignoring the chatter and just keeping your eyes on Jesus?
I believe that's exactly.
Just focus on Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Stay the course.
I had a dream this past week. Someone was trying to kill me, and this person is just someone. It's just not a happy camper towards me. Doesn't like me. And the whole point of the dream, it was a long dream. The whole point of the dream was, when I go into the secret place, just continue to bless and love. Focus on Jesus. Forgive your enemies. I hate to admit this, but a lot of leaders, they're not taken out by the accusation or the devil. They're taken out because you just focus on it. It's like you give someone enough rope, they end up hanging themselves sometimes.
Yes.
Just ignore.
That's right.
You know how you ignore? You spend most of your brain power on Jesus.
Chad, I believe that, like you said, most people really get tripped up, not because of the attacks of the enemy in their life, but more self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. And they self-sabotage. We do that in so many ways when we partner, agree with things, and we get distracted. But the reality is focusing on him, staying where he has you and doing what he's called you to do and just releasing that, sharing that, I mean, that defeats the enemy. It pushes him back.
1 year from right now, whoever's listening to us, whatever you're most worried about right now, 99 times out of 100, you won't even remember what you're worried about.
You can't kill something that's already dead. Mm-mm. And as we focus on him, we behold him, we keep the main thing the main thing. We live in a Galatians 2:20, I'm crucified with Christ state, and he can throw the kitchen sink, but it don't matter. You're already dead.
If you find yourself going through a lot of accusation in your job, there's a mentor that I have, and he talked about he went through constant accusation in his job his entire career for almost 40 years. You know what that's evidence of? John 15:1-5.
Yep.
Jesus told me one time some of the things he went through, and I just thought, what did he ever do to, like, goodness gracious, even his own family, I think it's Matthew, they're going to take him up to the point of the cliff and throw him off of it. it's funny to say it this way. It's like a play on words. It's the positive side of accusation, not all the time, but most of the time, for someone walking with God, it's evidence that you're abiding.
Yeah. Well, then the closer you get to him, you realize too, Chad, that what the enemy tries to curse, God will take that and turn it into a blessing. So God has such a powerful way about him that he can take all of that venom of accusation and actually turn it into a vehicle to bless and promote your life.
I had someone come to the altar years ago. I gave him a huge hug. This is incredible. He said, I got to confess something to you. I didn't even know his name. He said, I have hated you for so long, and I don't even know why. You know what the father said? Give him a hug. I gave him a hug. I think for a leader who's going through it, even in the marketplace, bless them, ignore them. It's actually a great opportunity to find out very quickly where you are with the Father. Yeah. I feel like Holy Spirit showing me a picture of Jesus right now, how many times he escaped crowds.
Yes.
You know how and why he escaped crowds? Because the cross was ordained by the Father, and the timing of the cross was ordained by the Father. The accusation didn't mean anything to Jesus, and the same one that put him on the cross got him out of all those mobs.
Yeah.
He abided to get to the cross. He abided to get out of the mobs. Basically, Jesus went to the cross because of his love and obedience to the Father, right?
Absolutely.
Jesus got out of the mobs because the Father got him out of the mobs. John 10:38, he said, it's not I that do these works, it's the Father who lives in me. When accusation is swirling, it really is like evidence of like, wow, God, I'm better friends with you than I thought. My mentor could not figure out why he went through so much accusation in the marketplace. Jealousy, backbiting. And then he realized as he progressively got closer to God, the accusations increased.
Yep.
You should be scared if there's never any accusations. Sign of a false prophet is everybody loves you.
Jesus said, woe to you when all men speak well of you.
Think of that, Michael. Break that down.
It's the red letter word from Jesus. Woe to you if all men speak well to you. It's you're actually in a dangerous place if it's really, really comfortable and cozy for a long time. That's when you got to step back and go, wait a minute, what's going on?
Do you know what I've noticed as a metric? I've never talked to you about this before. I've noticed that people that gossip and slander a lot, they give tons of affirmations to leaders. You know, behind every smile is a set of teeth. Behind every, you are wonderful, you are wonderful. If someone is telling you how wonderful you are all the time, run.
Flattery is another part of the language of the enemy.
I told somebody one time, God gave me the most sovereign, perfect wife ever. I really think I could raise the dead and she'd be like, we need to talk. You shouldn't have worn that shirt. It's a blessing.
Yeah.
Flattery, Michael. Flattery and accusation, they're like kissing cousins. They go together. Have you seen it?
1,000%. All the time. They'll behind flattery, because they both have and serve the same master in itself. And that's where the enemy presides in. It's all about self. It's all about building self up.
Why does the glory attract the devil? What is that all about? Why did Azusa Street attract every foul spirit within 100 miles? What is it?
You know, the thing that gets me about that is that it's the presence of God. And we got to think, you know, we're talking the enemy. We're talking about devils and the Satan. These were all angels at one time. These were all created to be eternal beings situated around the presence of God for eternity. And that's something that they'll never regain again. They lost it. And I don't know. I don't know the answer, but there's maybe a part of me, man, they missed that. They knew it reminds them of what they lost.
I think it drives them mad to see, especially someone who's going through suffering on the earth, just not lose their intimacy with the Father.
And here's another thought on it too. You think about it, is that it makes you wonder just how much that is involved in a lot of people that we just don't see on a normal basis. But when that presence shows up, it's like, whoa, it was here all the time. I just never could see it.
Michael, one time someone gave me a really nice plant for my birthday. About 6 months later, it died. And I just had a check in my spirit. I threw it in the trash can. I had a check in my spirit. I was reading a lot of passages back then on Jesus speaking to fig trees and raising the dead.
Yeah,
I spoke to the plant, told it to come back to life, and it did. Do you know that you can speak to a plant and just keep cursing it and dog it and curse it and curse it and curse it, and that thing will die? And you can speak to a plant and tell it to come back to life. I can't tell you how many times I've seen words change something in the natural, someone's body, a deliverance of a demon, et cetera, et cetera. Gossip and slander is curse. It's cursed.
It spiritually kills people.
Mm-hmm.
It brings death to the spirit and the soul of a person.
Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people, you know, Paul said about communion one time, some have fallen asleep before their time. Excuse me, what? Because they did not discern the Lord's body properly.
Mm-hmm.
1 Corinthians. The same principle, I like how Robert Morris teaches it, how you take principles even out of the old covenant and you still live by those principles. The principle of that passage that may not be literally about communion is this. It is possible to even go home before your time or to step under storm clouds that are not ordained by Abba
mm-hmm.
because our lack of abiding in kingdom principles. God hates gossip, slander, and accusation. And when I do that, whether I know I am or I'm not, I am inviting devils to invade my life.
Yep, 100%.
You don't hear much teaching that way.
Mm-mm. No, that's becoming really rare. But you did in the early church. You did in the Bible.
That's true. What did Jesus say? Hey, when you come to give money, you better get some stuff right with your brother first. Don't be bringing your money up here.
Jesus, man, I've been reading the Sermon on the Mount here lately for the last couple of weeks. And to me, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is dealing with one thing. Even though there's a lot of fundamental things, he's dealing with the heart motive of people. He's going to the root of internal motivations, why you do what you do. And I believe, this is the source of everything. It's where accusation comes from, gossip, slander. It's coming from that deep place in our hearts, that the real motives, the real intentions. And I think the Lord spends a lot of time trying to really address that because it's really, really important. Because if your heart is pure, right, not perfect in the way we define it, but pure, honest, those things can't land. It can't come from that.
John Bevere, I think he's written over 30 books. He said he went through more warfare with killing kryptonite than any of the books. Mm. You want to know why? It's New Testament idolatry.
Yeah.
Dr. Michael Brown up in Charlotte is one of the few that will go after the idea of New Testament idolatry. I think a lot of our sermons, we'd be better off sitting under teaching. All you do is hit play on a recording of the scripture themselves. Michael, the Apostle Paul would not be allowed to pastor in most churches in Greenville, South Carolina.
We'd be shocked.
He wouldn't be allowed. They would say, who are you?
We'd rip him off the stage and label him a doomsday prophet.
You just need to learn how to love Paul, the one who's preached on the gospel of grace more than anybody. But yet, this is where we find ourselves. But you know what? I'll close here. There's the redeeming side of this conversation that's exciting.
Yes.
As accusation upticks, as gossip and slander increases, the return of our King is near, brother.
It's near. And we'll end on that passage, right? Revelation 12. That's what's so hopeful is that it gives us a picture that there will be a church. There will be a remnant. There will be a community that won't be tainted by that, but will actually be a pure and spotless bride, and that they will war with the dragon. They will war with the enemy.
Real quick, Michael, what's the difference in a consecrated bride and a harlot bride?
A consecrated bride, to me, is a bride that says, Jesus, you're my one thing. You're my number one. A harlot bride says that in words, but doesn't have it in heart.
Father's reminding me right now, there's a judgment out on Christian music labels, Christian music stream. You know, he raised up Jeremy Riddle. He's raising up some others. Watch what happens in the next decade. Mm-hmm. You're going to see a lot more songs about the fear of the Lord. A lot of the your best life now and God exists to make you happy theology and songs is going to go bye-bye. And you're going to see a consecrated bride who's not afraid of persecution. Oh, it's coming, man. Mm-hmm. It is coming. But you know what you get? You know what you get being a consecrated bride? You get Jesus.
You know, on that note, can I just say, I've been in a lot of worship sets, a lot of powerful worship times. For me, what I take note sometimes is that when we really begin to sing from the right place in our hearts about the holiness of God, any songs with holy, they're just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Remember the dream I had last week? I had a dream last week. I was in Israel. Jesus was around 20 to 25 years old. He didn't have on any shoes. And I was with Mike Bickle in the dream, who represents the Shulamite anointing, and I was with my son, Jack Norris. But I noticed that the Lord didn't have on any shoes. Mm. And do you know, to this day, I know that Jesus is God, obviously. He still honors his Father.
Mm.
Yeah, Jesus is submitted to the Father.
Absolutely.
There, you know, where's the fear of the Lord gone? Where'd it go? I think it's returning to the church.
It is.
You know what the fear of the Lord is? It's not me being scared of him. It's me honoring him. It's me being in awe of him. When's the last time you were so in awe of God that you just went to a prayer room and all you did was just say, Jesus?
Chad, you know, the fear of the Lord, it is his divine nature. It's an aspect of who he is as a person, and we're invited into that.
I'm telling you right now, Michael, I'm telling you, I'm seeing this right now.
Yes.
It is the sign of a consecrated faith body. There are a lot of lead pastors that are not even born again. You don't need God to move in a church. You need some money. You need some charisma. A true consecrated bride, you fear the Lord. This past Sunday, Armando's sister, Melanie, Mo's wife, led worship. It was so intense in the spirit because she was singing a song. I think it was about holiness.
It was.
Fear the Lord, right?
We were singing about his holiness. I'm telling you.
Angela Danielson told somebody later, she was at the altar. She thought she was going to die under the glory. And this song was about the fear of the Lord. I think it was Holy Ground.
Yes. I'm telling you that I've learned whenever we've hit some really strong pockets about the holiness of God, his presence comes so strong in some of those worship times and sets. But it makes sense. Two passages we have that reveal what worship looks like in heaven, Isaiah 6, Revelation 4. What are they singing around the throne? Holy, 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 holy.
Do you know, this reminds me of, we'll close here, when Joshua is doing his thing and he's having some success and he has that encounter with the angel. He says, are you for us or against us? The angel said, neither. That angel even had the fear of the Lord.
Yes.
I mean, seriously.
Big time.
The angel could have said, well, I've been sent by Jehovah to protect you. The angel said, neither. God, the ultimate paradox is he loves me so much and I could die in his presence.
Yeah.
I know he's in me, but James says, draw close to me and I'll draw close to you.
Yes.
When's the last time you had a worship set, a prayer time, secret place where you said, you got to back up? Michael, I went to lunch yesterday and I told the Lord, I need a break. I bless you. May the fear of the Lord be a staple of your life. Go in peace.
Thanks for joining us on the Coach and Joe Leadership Podcast. Don't miss the Coach and Joe Talk Show on YouTube and check out coachandjoe.com for more resources, blogs, and merch. We will see you next time.